Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Edric Show. I am your host, Edric Jerome. This is the place for intelligent conversation with interesting people. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button, ring that notification bell, and you'll get notified of the content I post each and every week. I want to welcome back a friend of the show. We had a very good conversation the last time she was here, and I'd like to welcome back author and psychologist, Jim C. Colley. She's here to discuss her latest book, Him, Prince Charming, The Narcissist in My Head. She's also the author of the successful book, The War in the Heavens, Breaking the Chains of Generational Curse. I want to welcome back the prolific Jim C. Colley. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Edric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Good. I'm glad you got through the storms okay and everything.
Yes, everything is good now.
Good. Well, let's get into it. As I said, here you are, another book. Let's go. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Tell me about the story and how it came about.
Oh, that's always the big question, right? Him, Prince Charming, the Narcissist in My Head. It actually came about from the experiences that I had. Every time we hear people talk about Prince Charming, we always hear every time we hear others talk about Prince Charming, we always hear them talk about Prince Charming as a fairy tale savior, not in savior that's always going to come and save you from your woes, from any trauma that you're always in. But my theology is always Prince Charming is also the one that's saving you. He's not also the antagonist, but the protagonist, but he's also the antagonist and always hiding his hand and pretending this as if he don't know what it is that's going on so that he can always be the savior. So that was always something that I've always thought about. Hey, listen, this guy is technically the one that's causing the problem behind the scene and pretending as if he don't know what's going on in order for him to feel wanted. So Prince Charming is the covert narcissist. No one would never suspect him.
You mentioned you drew inspiration from real life examples and psychological research, obviously, as a psychologist.
Yes.
Did you use any of your experiences, not just for the story, but in the particular developing the characters of Kawa and Etana Levy? And tell me about those characters.
Kawa is a young lady that came from a dysfunctional background where her father is ironically, he's a detective. So she thinks that's her father who's emotionally unavailable to her mother and her other siblings. And because he's emotionally unavailable, she feels the need that she needs to get, you know, attention from someone somewhere else outside of her home because she's not getting it from her father. Because a young lady's first experience with a man is always with her father, correct? And so when she's not getting that, she's going to seek it outside. Now we have Etana, the authoress or the author, as we will typically say. She's a young lady who is studying psychology and have written a few books. So then we have Prince Charming who said, hey, this young lady was successful. I want to hire her on a contract so that she can write this book for me.
Tell me about just the idea of a narcissist, because like you say, you drew from your own experiences. When did you first realize that, I guess, either in your own personal life or you've seen it in others, when did you first experience this narcissistic behavior? And what was some of the, I guess, feelings or way it affected you personally?
I would say that it's not even when I first realized it, because it was always happening until you were able to have a difference, able to have understanding of what is going on in your environment. But there's a comparison and a contrast, you know, when you have something to balance in between. I began realizing it, I'll say, about like 6 years ago. But because there was a lot of self-doubt within myself, I didn't really accept it. Because what narcissists typically do with those who they are deceiving, they typically have them in a position where they're questioning their reality. You know, so even when they have evidence that, you know, this is the person that is actually causing the issue, the narcissist will have you question your belief, questioning your thoughts. He will have it in the way where he would say, fool you, or not specifically he, it could be she as well. But this spirit or this ideology will have you in a deceptive manner that you, even if when someone is come trying to tell you anything else outside of that, you would never even believe them. You will see them as the enemy.
What are some of the signs that maybe someone might be having an experience with a narcissist right now? What are some of the signs or examples of how someone might be going through being in a relationship with a narcissist, and you know, how can they overcome those like you did?
I want to say technically I overcome it. I'm still going through it because it leaves such a damaging impact on your psyche that you literally have to go through a withdrawal, just like if you were suffering from a substance, like substance abuse. So you go through the whole codependency withdrawal. You have to be in an environment that is supportive of supporting you of going through that withdrawal symptom. Because sometimes when you go to a withdrawal, you reflect back and you said, oh, maybe I'm thinking incorrectly. Maybe everyone around me doesn't want to see me be successful. So sometimes you return back into that toxic environment. Some of the signs that you are being narcissistically abused are gaslighting. They will always have you questioning your reality. You're never right. You're never the one that is right. They're never accountable for their actions. You're always the one that's wrong. And if you do bring them to the space of being accountable, they will punish you for it. They separate you from your family and friends and young ones. They go behind you and cause destruction. They don't want you to be independent, because the more independent you are, the less likely you are to rely on them for anything, because the narcissist always wants to be in control.
Conversely, obviously, there was something about the narcissist that attracted you and others. What are some of the ways that narcissists make themselves, I guess, irresistible to people? Because it's not, I mean, if they exhibited all this bad behavior from the jump street, then obviously no one would be attracted to them. But there's something about a narcissist that attracts these types of relationships. So for you, what makes narcissists so attractive?
It's not specifically them that is attractive. It's the things that they do. And these people are very calculative. They pick their specific individual who are wounded. So it's not that, okay, you're the prettiest girl or the prettiest guy, or you have the most money or et cetera. It's that your wound is like a vulture. The vulture is not going to go after an animal that is healthy. The vulture is going to go after an animal that is dying, and it will sit around and wait until you die to, you know, to feast on your body, right? Hover over you. And that's some of the things that the narcissist done. So it's the same as a pedophile. The pedophile will go into the home and seek out a specific victim. Say, for example, if they have a little league team where they're playing baseball, the coach would make sure that, okay, this child here, he doesn't have a home, or he doesn't have parents that is supportive of him, or it's a single mother and she's not really available. She's emotionally unavailable. Is the child that is very introverted, is not really going to tell anybody anything. Perfect. Perfect example. So, and this is the same thing that the narcissist does. They look for their specific victims that are wounded so that, you know, they can destroy them and be able to have that control over them.
I mentioned when we came on that, you know, you are prolific. You write and you write and you write and you write, which I admire you for that, because there's discipline
Thank
there.
You.
Tell me about your creative process in terms of writing books of fiction. Does it just all come out? I mean, have you planned this for years? I mean, tell me a little bit about your writing process and your writing style.
The writing process. This is my first time actually venturing into a fictional book. And to me, this one felt more personable, because it was like I started living through the characters. And there were times where I was crying and I'm asking myself, what are you doing? Why are you crying? These people aren't even real. But then when I talk to my friends and let them listen to different parts of it, little synapses, you know, they're so engaged. They said, it's not that it's not, the characters are not real, but there's people out there living these type of lives. So you're telling someone else's story. So the writing process, sometimes, you know, I put on my music and I go into a zone where I don't want to talk to anybody and I'm in tune with this person. And I will sit there and I will push myself to write at least 3,000 words for a day. So it becomes this egotistical thing. Like, If you don't write 3,000 words for a day or more than that, then you're not good. But it becomes so exhausting because, you know, the creative mind is not like it's something that I planned on writing. I'm listening to the voices of the creative part of me, instructing me and guiding me on what to do.
There's an overriding theme in not just this book, but your other books as well, of getting away from something, of breaking through, of leaving something behind. Have you thought about those connections? Because it does seem like a line between your first book, your second book, and now your third book. There does seem to be that correlation.
Now that you say it, I absolutely agree. And it is a part of that, something that I'm trying to get out of. That cultural idea that tells me that I'm nothing. It's like it's a constant battle within my lower self versus my highest self. Or as they would say in psychology, the id versus the subconscious, or the subconscious versus the conscious. So those three, there's a constant battle with what I was told who to be or who to be. Or that abusive parent that, you know, that was telling you that you weren't nothing. So now you're trying to get away from them, or you're trying to achieve something because of what culture say you're supposed to be. You know, you never fulfill the gully, the gully that the culture tell you that you're supposed to look like this, you're supposed to be like that, you're supposed to think like that. So it's trying to get through and get away from it, but it's like you never feel like you're going to ever fill that void.
And also, like your previous books, the artwork is amazing. Your covers are just, they stand out, they pop, everything that you would expect in an engaging book that would make you want to pick it up. Talk to me about your artwork and how that imagery came about.
That imagery. That was actually specifically someone that looks like the narcissist. So I said, okay, you know, let it be this person. That was a very bold move. My artwork comes from actually think about them before I write the book. What do I want this to look like? And when I actually draw it down, because I'm not a great, you know, I'm the writer, not the artist. So when I draw it down, the artist that I work with, I send it to him, he always seems to understand what I'm talking about. And so sometimes we work on it for 3, 4 weeks just to, you know, because of my creative juice. I'm like, no, move this right here, move that right there. So they get to know me because they build a relationship with me, and they know that, you know, I'm this perfectionist when it comes to it. Like it has to be, you know, this image, it has to be perfect enough just to get it done. So sometimes even they get tired of me. They're overseas, I'm here in the States, and you know, I'm up all night sometime waiting, just, you know, I'm like, okay, pop this little color, put on a pink shirt, because the narcissist is a playboy. He always want to look like he put a little earring in his ear, you know? So that alone was enough work.
Well, obviously it worked. I think you're on your
Thank
way
you.
to another successful book. Before we move on, real quick, let me just ask you about your previous book. That one caught fire. You touched a lot of people with your previous book. Tell me about how that one's going, and how you're able to leverage that book into your next one.
The War in the Heavens, Breaking the Chains of Generational Curses, it actually did catch a lot, it set a lot of people's skin on fire as well. That one is going very successful. It has now been picked up by Harvard State University, which I was like, what in the world?
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was so shocked. I woke up in the morning and I was feeling so sad and so down, like, oh, I'm not achieving certain things. And I just took my name into Google and said, let me see how far my books have gone. I was like, whoa, no way. You know, I called my friends and they're like, you know, your book has really reached that far. And I'm like, yeah. They was like, okay, you have no reason to complain about anything no more. You know, this is the heights of it. And so now what it is that I am working on, getting it in more libraries and more universities, which is quite surprising. Some of the universities that are local are the ones that are giving me more issues, and some of them who are in higher level or more acceptable of it than anything else. And it's the people that look more like my complexion that are giving me the more complexity than the ones who aren't. Breaking the Chains of Generational Curses, is such a big topic within itself that it, you know, it hit on people and they become offended. Even my own family, my own fraternal family, when we had a Zoom meeting to introduce everyone who weren't aware of who was, just to get a little meet, for us to get to know each other. And when I mentioned that, I was a student in the University of Maryland, I'm studying psychology, and the book, The War in the Heavens, Breaking the Chains of Generational Curse, it ruffled a lot of feathers. And it made a lot of people in the meeting very uncomfortable. Some even got up and left the meeting. And I was talking about how the psychological impact of the people in the West Indies, specifically Jamaica, how dysfunctionality is so adaptive, it becomes a normal thing for them and is a means of survival. And one of my cousins in the group said, "Yes, Jim, this is very true. It becomes so adaptive that we don't even recognize that's what we're doing." And it made everyone very uncomfortable to the point where it's like, no, we don't longer want to have anything to do with Jim. And it's not that the implement in the in the material of the books were specifically geared towards anyone of my generation, but it was geared towards a universal generational thing. Because generational curse is not just specifically towards me as a Jamaican, but as a Jamaican having experience in a universal experience. Because the whole universe is going under a generational curse. But everyone generational curse is different. So everyone generational impact is different. For some people, the generational curse for them is they're being the protagonist. They're being the antagonist for other cultures. They're being the mischief for other cultures and making other cultures on, killing other people and thinking that they're better because of, their race or their languages. And for some, it's the constant need to be the victim under that race and having an idea inside of victimization.
Well, Jim, again, congratulations on your new
Thank
book,
you.
Him, Prince Charming, The Narcissist in My Head. You're courageous, you're fearless, you are an artist. Your medium just happens to be words, but you are an artist. So take that for what it's worth. But if
Thank
people
you.
want more information about you or they want to get a copy of the book, where can they go?
Prince Charming, The Narcissist in My Head has not yet been released. It's still being in the works editing. So that should be out in June of 2024, by God's will. But as far as the other books, The Damsel in Distress and The War in the Heavens, Breaking the Chains of Generational Curses, are available on all platforms such as Barnes and Nobles, Amazon, Target, Walmart, Lulu, Ingram, Sparks, and many more places.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Jim, I always appreciate talking with you. I always enjoy our
Thank you.
conversations. At the rate you're going, you'll probably have another book in about an hour. you're pushing them out. You're taking such weighty subjects, and you're boiling them down. And as you said, you're affecting people because you're getting reactions, which is what
Right.
true art does that. It gets a reaction. So,
Right. Absolutely.
Jim C. Colley, thank you so much for joining me on the Edric Show. I really appreciate it. And again, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. This has been another edition of the Edric Show. I am your host, Edric Jerome. This is the place for intelligent conversation with interesting people. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button, ring that notification bell. You'll get notified of the content I post each and every week. I want to thank you for tuning in, and I will catch you on the next episode.